All your trillions of cells talk. Every single move you make has a significant impact on today and tomorrow.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for joining me today for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast brought to you by Runners Connect. I really appreciate the time you've taken to listen to this, and I hope you enjoy. So last week, I talked to Tony and Ashley from Black Girls Run, and I loved hearing their journey of how they've built up this giant group that prides itself on leaving no woman left behind. If you did miss that episode, make sure you go back and check it out and see if they have a running group near you. So we know that running is risky, and I think the latest figures found that up to 80% of runners get injured every single year. And when that happens, I don't know about you, but I tend to go into some kind of mad panic trying to figure out what I did wrong. We usually find something that we must have done in the past few days to cause it, but my guest today might actually change your thinking with that one. Did you ever consider that the other 23 hours of your day that you're not running might actually be what affects you? So today I'm going to be talking to performance recovery specialist Kristen Marvin. So you're probably wondering, well, what the heck is a performance recovery specialist? And don't worry, that is my first question for Kristen. So before we meet her, let's have a quick word from our sponsor and we'll get on with it. Running with music or podcasts distract us when those mental demons are loud, but not when you're tangled in cords. Jabra Pulse is a wireless sports earbud that is perfect for runners of all levels and speed. Visit jabra.com/runnersconnect to enter to win a free Jabra Pulse every month. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Kristen.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm excited to hear more about this. So let's dive right in. You describe yourself as a performance recovery specialist. Now, for those people like me, and I'm sure a lot of other listeners who have no idea what that means, do you want to kind of go into what exactly that is?
Sure. Typically, in terms of performance recovery for runners, people would think about along the lines of nutrition, sleep, stretching, and mobility. But I go more into everyday movements and things outside of the running field. So not at all within the coaching realm, all the, you know, the 20 hours or the 23 hours that a runner does not spend running. And I help them through skeletal alignment, whole body movements, and daily positions that they hold that can affect their performance in their running. So the running might not get them injured. It's everything that they do outside of running. And then in a running workout, they might feel a little bit of a, you know, pain, and that just might be the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, a few of our other guests have kind of talked about this. A few of the doctors have kind of mentioned the importance of your everyday movements and the way you hold yourself. And actually, I do have a good example for you. I was at my sister's wedding a few weeks ago, and I ended up wearing heels for 12 hours. And the next day, something was wrong with the back of my knee. And when I went to see a massage therapist, she told me it was because I was kind of tiptoeing while walking, because I was walking across cobblestones in London. And she said it was that movement of, you know, it was essentially like tightening up my hamstrings. And it was that movement, and that was nothing to do with running. So that for me was kind of a wake up call that your everyday movements can be effective. And that kind of would go along, thinking my skeletal alignment probably wasn't very good there anyway.
Absolutely, absolutely. So your whole body structure changes as soon as you are put into a heeled shoe. Mm-hmm. So most running shoes are heeled shoes, just like high heels, except they're, you know, not as high, mm-hmm. but they affect people's body structures as well. Mm-hmm. So any type of a heel lift at all, whether it's 1 millimeter or whether it's 3 inches off the ground, it massively affects all the structures in your body. So starting from skeletal alignment and all the musculature and the angles and the forces placed on the joints. and you can feel it at the joint level. So, you know, people can feel it, you know, in terms of their toes and mm-hmm. those bunions, in terms of the knee, in terms of the hip, in terms of the back, and as well as, you know, hamstring and calf, because you have a shortening, a very slow process of shortening muscles in the body at adaptation. Your calves, you know, are shortening over time, as well as your hamstrings, depending on the shoes that you wear. And a lot of runners cast their feet too much, whether it's cushioning of the shoe or whether it's the heel lift, and also the toe boxes in a lot of shoes. They have gotten better, but they definitely change the structure of your body, and also just in terms of the circulation, blood circulation and electrical flow. And all that is uber important, because you want to have groceries in and garbage out, mm-hmm. especially obviously when talking about recovery. Yeah. So after you've done a really hard workout, you want to recover as quick as possible, and you're tearing everything while you're working out, and you want to recover and repair and regenerate and rebuild. And a lot of times people aren't doing that from the positions that they hold and the things that they put on their body, casting their body, as well as just the alignment when you're wearing, you know, certain shoes and such.
Okay, so let's go further into that as we're kind of talking about this. Many, I'm sure most people listening either have a full-time job or have something that requires they wear a certain type of shoe. Maybe they have to dress up for work, or maybe they have to, you know, this is men and women, like you mentioned, even a millimeter, but even men's shoes have some kind of lift. Or, you know, they have to wear some kind of shoe, they're maybe a nurse or something. What would you recommend for people who do have to work and spend a lot of hours in those kind of shoes?
Right. Well, when you're put into that situation where it is a must, then you need to do corrective exercises in order to kind of regain or help out with those tissues in that particular area. And the calves and the hamstrings are huge for runners mm-hmm. who are professionals in terms of their work environment, and then they go out for a run. And not only do they wear shoes, dress shoes, they also wear the comfort running shoes or the heeled shoes. So they have all this time casting their feet in a certain way that affects pretty much everything, because everything comes from the feet up. All of the information possible that you can have, you're basically closing off the feet are 25% of, you know, the musculature and musculoskeletal system, period. So you also have a lot of vasculature and nerves down there, and all mechanoreceptors. So basically information for proprioception in terms of, you know, the feeling that you want to provide, the sensory information that you want to provide for your brain, and also the circulation that you want to provide to your heart. Your feet are the furthest away. So if they're wearing those shoes constantly all the time, then it must do corrective exercises and things outside of that particular environment that will help. So yes, you got to do the calf stretches, the hamstring stretches, and also at home, if you love sitting on the couch, you might want to think about sitting on the floor, because sitting on the couch, well, once again, you know, you're probably in terms of tuck of the tailbone and then bending the knees nice and relaxed. You want to have the straight legs and sitting on the ischiotuberosities when you're sitting on the ground, so you can lengthen in a passive lengthening state, and you don't have to worry about, well, I'm going to have to stretch or do mobilize for 8 hours because I just sat for 8 hours at work with improper shoes. It's a little bit of a give and take, but definitely I would also ask for a little leeway in terms of the shoes that you wear at work, because it does, you know, over a course of a year, over a course of 10 years, over a course of 20 years, 30 years that people work in a particular profession, everything's fine with the running for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden, one day, oh, I have, you know, I just, my meniscus, just all of a sudden. Well, mm-hmm. things don't happen just all of a sudden. It's mm-hmm. absolutely over time. And a lot of runners, in terms of standing up, because of the shoes that they wear and such, they tend to lean forward. that puts massive amounts of pressure on ankle, mm-hmm. knee, hip, and back. And so anything in between, from the foot all the way to the back, people, a lot of runners get that. And then obviously the shoulders are major issues because of a lot less work done with the hands and the arms in different ways. So if they could possibly think about outside of work and doing more footwork, so barefoot work, if their feet are incredibly sore when they do barefoot work, be very, very careful and just even manipulating their feet, giving a self-massage with a therapy ball. I particularly use the yoga tube therapy ball for self-massage because I'm a role model method user in terms of yoga tune-up with Jill Miller, mm-hmm. and also I'm a yoga tune-up practitioner. So that definitely helps any type of manipulation, because if you cast something, if you were to wear gloves all day, every day, then how, you know, the sensation that you would have on your hands and the use and the dexterity of your hands wouldn't be as good.
Yeah.
Or if you have, it's like, if you have a cast on, you're not going to have it on for 10 years. Mm-hmm. But we decide to wear orthotics. I wore orthotics for 15 years, and then I just took them off. It took me 2 years to get out of orthotics.
Yeah.
But we love casting our certain parts of our body, and we think it's okay, and we think we need to do it because we're told to do it, and it works for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we're talking about whole body health and movement, circulation, on all that kind of stuff, we can't just, you know, quote unquote, band-aid something mm-hmm. and make it okay for the rest of the body.
Absolutely. No, that's great. And that really is, I think, helpful and, you know, makes it kind of clear to understand that, you know, we think of shoes as normal, or we kind of get used to things hurting. Like, you know, every day you walk around, you kind of get used to, like you said, the bunion pain, like a rubbing, or it may be your shoulders, you get kind of used to the tightness, so you don't even feel it anymore. But kind of a little bit of pain becomes our normal. So, you know, this is really going to be eye-opening for a lot of people. And do you have, I mean, I know you said about the manual manipulation and you said about barefoot work, which I'm assuming includes just not wearing shoes when you are in the house.
Yeah, and understanding that the foot is divided into several parts. Mm-hmm. Can you, without touching your toes, can you move each individual mm-hmm. toe? Now people will think, well, who cares? I don't need that. I just need, you know, to push off the toes in order to run better. And they don't really think, well, you know, my foot is in a shoe, so it's okay. But it's not okay, you know, in terms of cardiovascular whole body health, every single one of your muscles needs to function properly mm-hmm. in order to get the appropriate oxygen to all the cells for full health. And moving those toes individually, then moving, you know, whether in terms of the whole range of motion, you know, at the ankle. So whether you have dorsiflexion, plantar flexion, and eversion, inversion, just moving your foot around. When you do it with shoes on, the information that your foot gets, because we have a lot of joints in the foot, is completely different in a shoe than it is barefoot. Mm-hmm. And do people, even if you can't go outside, you can bring some marbles inside or rocks. Obviously, it's all dependent on the person's, I don't want to say pain tolerance, it's what they have done with their feet over the course of their lifetime that will, you know, matter. But any type of manipulation through the feet will absolutely help uptown.
Mm-hmm. I've actually, I recently was sent a roll recovery R3. I don't know if you know what one of those are, but I found that's been very helpful in just kind of working my feet and kind of, it's found little areas of tightness that I had no idea were even there. But yeah, I've really enjoyed using that as well. Okay, so is there a particular brand of shoe or a type of shoe that you would recommend for people based off what you've seen? Or is it just Like you said, try and spend as little time in your shoe as possible, and it really doesn't make a difference, too much of a difference specifically.
Well, it's more than that. Absolutely, unshoded is the best, because there's been incredible amount of studies that have been, you know, all around the world, and they have, as a population wise, China has, you know, many people living there, and they've done an incredible amount of studies, because in terms of the foot, when a child is born, the foot isn't fully developed. They don't have, you know, the same amount of bones, and everything slowly develops until adulthood. And it's not like, you know, as soon as you're 18, all of a sudden you have a perfect foot. It's just, it depends, depends on the person. But when, you know, children grow up, the people that were in shoes more often had more health issues, period. So it was irrespective of what kind of shoe it was. That's kind of not the point at all. So it's important to understand that it's definitely being unshowed, but movements, whether you're in a shoe or not, do you live in a place where it's all flat? Do you go uphill? Do you go downhill? Do you maneuver around in different areas? Because, you know, you have the cross-country runners and the track runners. If you're always a track runner, there's a tendency for track runners to have a little bit more injuries than cross-country runners. Now, I'm not saying that is, you know, be-all, end-all, but how you maneuver your foot and use your foot all day, every day, within running and outside of running, will definitely impact its health as well.
Okay. Thank you. That's great. That's helpful. Helps to clear that up. So if someone were to come work with you as a performance recovery specialist, what kind of things would you do with the client? I mean, you mentioned when we talked before that maybe you could use me as an example if that helps to kind of explain it, but what would be your example of what you would do?
Yeah, it always depends on the person, but like, for example, you, in terms of, you're still an overstrider, right?
I'm working on it, but yes.
You're working on it. Well, I'm just, you know, just giving examples. Yeah. And your hip extension isn't that great. It could be better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, there can be tension, you know, because your peroneal muscles and your calves and your hamstrings, and all of those, believe it or not, have a lot to do with the ability to your for your feet to work properly. Mm-hmm. But also, you have a couch, and I don't know how often you sit down on the floor with your legs straight.
So yeah. Let's pause for a second there while you're saying about that. You mentioned that earlier about sitting on the floor. So when you say that to me, the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, everyone's going to laugh, the non-English people, we get a numb bum or a numb butt, I guess, for Americans. Mm-hmm. How would you not get that if you were sitting on the floor? Like, I can feel it already, like the tingling in, like from sitting on the floor. How would you not get that if you were going to sit on the floor?
Yeah, you don't do it for very long at all, because your body's, you have adapted over time to a sitting position, and you cannot possibly sit with straight legs and your quads nice and relaxed and everything, and, you know, sitting on your ischial tuberosities, which are just the sit bones, and in a proper skeletal alignment. And pretty much you'd probably sit on a few cushions or even, you know, a few blocks or books higher off the ground to make sure that you were in a better position. And it would only be a few minutes.
Okay.
But those easy, very, very easy things to do when you watch TV, when you read, when you're on your computer for a few minutes, those simple things could have a vast impact in terms of how the hamstrings and calves feel over time. And just, it's, you're using more musculature when you get down to the ground and when you stand back up.
Okay.
Simple, simple stuff. The more you move your body, the better your body will be. And also in terms of, you know, hip extension, you know about the psoas muscle, right?
I do, but yes, if you could explain that just for any
Yes.
runners listening.
So it is an incredible muscle attached to so many things. There's 22 to 24 attachments, and it's actually comes on the front of the spine, so it attaches to the lower two ribs, so that's T12, thoracic 12, and then it interdigitates the lumbar spine. Then it goes down through, it has two sides, it goes down through the pelvis and attaches to the lesser trochanter, the femur, so the, you know, leg bone. So not only is it attaching to the legs, it's within the pelvis, and it attaches to the lumbar spine, and it attaches to the ribs. It affects so many parts of the body, and an incredible amount of runners have really restricted psoas, and they're on either side. You can have a major, minor, auxiliary. It's crazy, like when you actually, you know, it's not like we're going to dissect a live human, but there's so many issues that can occur with that particular muscle. It affects your hamstrings. It affects, you know, the pelvic floor and how your pelvis moves. It affects your back. It affects your breathing. It affects your ribs and all that kind of stuff. So definitely working on, you know, thinking, okay, I need to work on, you know, because my hip flexors are tight, so I'm going to work on my hip extensors because, you know, I need to work on both sides. But just doing hip exercises is not necessarily going to do the trick. You have to think of it more than that. You have to think about a lot of runners, and I'm not saying, I'm just doing a general statement here, but a lot of runners don't walk that much. They're like, why, you know, I'm just going to run, get that in, and then I'm going to do my work for the rest of the day. So there's a term that Katie Bowman, one of my mentors, says, it's actively sedentary.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that before.
Yeah, you have your 2 hours of hardcore workout run, and then the rest of the day, you're pretty much a couch potato. What do I mean by couch potato? Let's say, you know, somebody wakes up and, yeah, they might go for a run and then they eat. Then they get in their car. They go to work. They're at work all day. They come back. They might go for another run and then they come home and that's it. It's people need to understand in terms of the best, well, regardless of if you're in sport or not, more movement is better. And doing it, every single small little muscle in your body and big muscle in your body is important. Not just, you know, in terms of running, it's an extremely repetitive sport and you use the same muscles over and over again. So it's overuse of those muscles and underuse of many other muscles. And runners do not pay attention to the other muscles. And, you know, therein lies issues of, you know, a starving at the cellular level for so many other muscles. And in terms of a cardiovascular, you know, everybody's cardiovascular workout, that doesn't really, people think that I'm going to run for my health, but well, in reality, it doesn't help as much as you think. Okay. It's, yeah.
If you are sedentary most of the rest of the time.
Yeah. And also it depends on, you know, how your body is today and what you do, but moving more throughout the day and not doing it in an improper way. Like if I move my body in not so healthy ways, then it doesn't help at all. Like it's moving around all day, every day. I know that's a little bit much because it's impossible for people who are at work all day, but even small little things like getting up every 15 minutes just to walk around.
Can that even be like a 2 minute from one end of the house to the other or to the bathroom and back? Or does it need to be, you know, a certain amount of time or like?
No, it's just, it can be movements, whether you get up or whether you are, you know, wherever you are, it's moving more. Because if we do the same thing over and over and over again, it does affect every, you know, every possible system in our body and hence, you know, problems occur.
Yep.
Like, for example, for me, people blame things on genetics. And there's certain, you know, certain things that happen where genetics are a little bit, you know, higher to equate, but most times than not, people who have, let's just talk about athletes and runners, injuries, we're talking about injuries. So 99% of the injuries are like environment. Now I can say my dad had toe arthritis, you know, osteoarthritis, and my grandma had osteoarthritis in the toe, and everybody in my family has it. So I'm going to get it. So that's purely genetic. Well, it's not that, like epigenetics. So it's how our genes express themselves over time, whether it's, you know, the environment or an external factor. And it's very much, I put my feet in the most cushioned possible shoes ever. And I was getting plantar fasciitis, shin splints, and I got back pain and all that kind of stuff. And over time, over 10 years, I ended up getting osteoarthritis of the toe. Now, people would say, well, of course you'd get it because your dad had it. But it's far more than that. It's cells in our body respond to, you know, so we're moving around and we have mechanical stimulus when we're running. And this is in terms of mechanotransduction. So we have a mechanical stimulus and the cell will have an electrochemical response that will change things in the body. And it's fascinating to me that if, you know, I had put my body in a different environment and done things differently, what I know today, if I had done back then, I wouldn't have been in the same situation that I was today, because I had a shellectomy, if I said it right there, but basically I got a bone shaving of the toe. Mm-hmm. And so I had big bone spur at the metatarsophalangeal joint, and also on the proximal phalange of my big toe, of my hallux. And it is absolutely fascinating how just environmental factors and external factors that runners don't know about today that can absolutely impact their functioning, their body. And bunions, people think that bunions are genetic. Bunions are genetic, but every shoe that you put on, and if, you know, you're walking duck feet, if you're running duck feet and all that kind of stuff, it's way more than that. And how much your shoes don't fit, all these kinds of things have vast impacts. So I kind of help people understand what they could do to help them within their running from the outside,
okay,
from their everyday movements.
Okay.
Because you have a little bit of, for you, do you have a little bit of bunion on your right foot?
By my big, like on the outside by my big toe? Is that what you mean?
No, there's any time, like as soon as you start seeing a deformation kind of like moving, mm-hmm, laterally, the big toe moving laterally, so to the outside.
I'd say I have a pretty big callus next to my toenail on my right foot, but maybe you're kind of foreshadowing here that I need to.
But yeah, it's just getting people to understand that it's not just the running. Because like when I was younger, I was a runner. I still am, but not as much as I was before. And I thought, I just have to work out well, and I just have to eat properly, mm-hmm, and do a couple of stretches and then rest. But my resting was not cool at all, because I would sit and, you know, do nothing instead of move and do things. Mm-hmm. So when I talk to people, I make sure that whatever they are doing outside of their sport and what they do at work and even their bed, you know, how they sleep, all that kind of stuff does affect their running.
Okay. So if someone were to, if you were trying to, which obviously this whole episode has been doing, if you were trying to convince someone right now that this is something worth paying attention to, I can just see a few kind of people who are a bit skeptical out there, like, oh, you know, wouldn't it be better for me to put my time and money into kind of just, you know, fixing my imbalances for running? Like, how would you like to convince people right now that this is something that really will make a difference, not only to their running, but the rest of their lives?
Yeah. Okay, well, number one, biomechanical assessment, running biomechanical assessment, anything that you learn within that can be learned from your walk, your walking. Your walking gait and your running gait, yes, they walking and running are different. However, the imbalances that you have while you're running are just emphasized more because you're running.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people don't move. You're actually getting more movement nutrients through walking than you do through running. Mm-hmm. A lot of runners cheat through running and mm-hmm. get from A to B faster in a very poor manner.
Mm-hmm.
But walking, and I'm under the understanding, obviously, that you're going to wear proper shoes or no shoes, and you're going to move through a different environment, and you know, it's also your stress levels and all that kind of stuff. But your gait, absolutely, walking gait, you can get just as much information and help you in running than just getting a running assessment.
Okay, that makes sense.
Basically, a lot of people, and this is I'm not trying to be rude or mean or anything, but a lot of people are lazy. They want a quick fix, so they'll go see somebody, and they just want it done fast. Providing this information takes a lot longer, and it takes a change in lifestyle. Yeah, you love, let's say, not you, let's say somebody loves sitting on the couch and they want to do that. And I say, well, you know what? If you're going to do A, B, C, and D, like you have to go to work and you have to, quote unquote, you know, have to go to work and do this and wear this and blah, blah, blah. And then you have to go in the car, you have to do this. Like there's only certain things. Once you add everything up, you know, you add your car ride, your transport, you add the amount of hours that you have to sit, you add that you have to wear those nice shoes, you add all these things. There's some things you have to decide to take away, because people, a lot of runners will be like, it's my age. It has to do with your mechanical loading over time. Like obviously when you're 10, you've sat less than when you're 40.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it's not for everybody, and that's cool, but it definitely, it does change your body. It takes time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. And this is really kind of insightful here. This is something that definitely isn't paid attention to very much, but it is something that quite a few of our previous guests, I know the guy I went to see, Max Prokopy, talked about it. I know Dr. Steve Gangemi, the sock doc, talked about it. And Dr. Steve Pribbett also talked about it. This seems to be a recurring theme here. So this is good. To kind of, you know, drill that in and kind of hear about it from someone who actually focuses on purely this as their career. So let's, for people who kind of are interested in how this kind of develops for you, you ran in the World Cross Country Championships as a teenager, and you have a master's in sports psychology, but you have kind of taken this on a different area. But how did you kind of pick up an interest in this performance recovery area?
Well, I've always been interested in sports. Like I had an amazing time growing up in Ottawa. And then when I got into running, I was, you know, serious into running. So I wanted to be an athlete, mm-hmm. an athlete only, and go, go, go. And then after, okay, I'm really interested because I wanted more mental aspect, because you know, every once in a while you have a good race, you have a bad race. I'm thinking, okay, if I just have the best mental attitude, I'll do well. So I got into the sports psychology side. And then, you know, I was coaching and I thought, there's got to be more, because I kept on getting injured, other people kept on getting injured, and I couldn't understand why the same thing would happen over and over again, even though I was listening to everybody. So it wasn't enough just to do exercise physiology, sports psychology. And, you know, I did testing with athletes in terms of exercise physiology and all that kind of stuff. And it was fascinating. And I love all of that. But frustrating to no end why people keep on getting injured.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, there's overtraining. Overtraining is prolific. Way too many people overtrain in almost every sport. runners, some runners, depending on, you know, their personality type, are serious overtrainers, and they don't know that. So that will absolutely influence their injury levels. And I wanted more than just the, because I, you know, I don't have a degree in nutrition or anything, but I wanted something a little further than that. So, you know, I looked into other areas of how to kind of like heal myself, because I believe in going to see everybody. I'm very much, I love seeing healthcare practitioners, no matter who they are. So I'm all about whatever works for that particular person. But from my standpoint, in terms of recovery, performance recovery specialist, it is self-care, okay, and education, what you can do. Because even when you go see healthcare, you know, practitioners, it's only for a very short amount of time. They can't help you the rest of the time that you're not there with them.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes
sense. So what can you do at home? What can you do at, you know, the track or wherever? Everywhere else, because nobody's going to be on you. You are responsible for your own health. You have to take ownership and know your body better, because then you'll have better discourse, you know, with the healthcare practitioners in the first place. So I got more into that, you know, with Jill Miller, Yoga Tune-Up, and love that part in terms of fascia, the aqueous knitting fabric of your body, of course, the connective tissue, and how you can manipulate it and change your body, fascially speaking, and Katie Bowman in terms of how you can change the whole structure of your body through nutritious movement. So,
what is nutritious movement?
In terms of what are the micronutrients and macronutrients of movement. So we have this diet, and you know, for in terms of actual food nutrition, that's been going on for years and years and years and years. And so we have a pretty good understanding of nutrition, but I still think there's far more many years to go. But in terms of mechanical loading of our body from a biomechanics standpoint, there's very, very little knowledge about it. So that's what her focus is going to be for her lifetime, and making sure that people understand that not only the macronutrients are happening, those big movements, people think this and that, also all the little small movements. We need everything to have a healthy body through food and also through movement.
Okay, great. And that just kind of caught your interest while you were, going through your university career and while you were competing professionally yourself and things like that. Was it just kind of built over
Yes.
time? Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. All right. Well, in a second, I just want to ask you about a bit more about recovery specifically. But first, I just want to take a moment to thank our sponsor. Some days, we need all the motivation we can get to make sure we finish our workout or make it through that cross-training session, especially when we're trapped indoors. It has been well documented that running with music or a motivating podcast can help improve performance. But as much as I love the idea, I found myself getting frustrated with the cords getting in my way, or when they would rip out of the treadmill. Finally, I have a solution. Jabra Pulse is the sweat-proof, weatherproof, wireless sports earbud that is perfect for runners of all levels and speeds. Even better, it has an accurate in-ear heart rate monitor that quickly connects to your phone so you can ditch the chest strap. The earbuds will have a secure and comfortable fit thanks to the ability to customize the earpieces. Runners Connect listeners can get exclusive offers and enter to win a free Jabra Pulse headset by signing up at jabra.com/runnersconnect. That's jabra.com/runnersconnect to start your journey, or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts. Okay, and we're back. So I want to ask you a little more about recovery, as you know, that is part of your title. And as we've talked about before, it is so important in being able to run not only your best, but actually being able to run at all, because like you mentioned, so many people get injured. But when it comes to recovery itself, what would you say is the most neglected aspect of recovery?
Walking.
Really? Okay. I guess that kind of does make sense based on what you've said, but I didn't expect that to be the most important. And
for runners, and obviously I'm not talking about nutrition, food nutrition, and I'm not talking about rest or sleep Okay. This and that.
Okay.
Runners do not walk enough. Imagine if runners just walked just a little bit more each day in the proper attire and getting, you know, walking on rocks, doing something crazy, like mm-hmm. where you have sand. You might not have this at all. And, you know, using your body in different ways. That's another thing. So I understand, you know, I'm from Ottawa, Canada. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in a winter climate. You know, there was 45 centimeters of snow that was just dumped in Ottawa. And here I am at plus 35, boiling hot. So in it depends
Perth,
where you are.
Anyone.
In Perth, sorry, my apologies, in Perth, Australia. Yes. And where you are, runners typically, they do their workout, they do their stretches, their mobility, their strengthening activities, but they don't think about kind of like every single muscle in the body. Mm-hmm. What can you do whole body movement? Can you incorporate crawling, or can you incorporate, you know, things in your house? Can you hang, you know, at each, when you go past through a door in your house? Hanging just
almost like being a little child, like finding ways, little mini ways to like play throughout the day.
Yes, play, move, whatever word you like using, but absolutely, it's way too segmented and just overusing very small parts of the body and underusing way bigger parts of the body. So many runners don't know how to hang out in a squat. You know, and runners don't spend time on the ground. And you know what? It's kind of weird. You know, it's kind of more in a different, you know, maybe the Eastern culture, but it's not at all. It's a human body. We have just segmented things. Oh, isn't that what so-and-so does? A human body is a human body. And you know what? Our DNA hasn't changed for hundreds of thousands of years. So it's kind of like our bones have changed, definitely, and we have become not as kind of like resilient and robust since mm-hmm. the Industrial Revolution, because there's more technology, there's more chairs, there's more this, there's more that, and we need to find ways to move more. That's it.
Okay, so would you say then, I think I know the answer here, it would be better for people to do, say, once an hour, get up and do maybe some yoga stretches or walk, go for a little short walk, you know, 5 minutes around the house, or just do some kind of movement once an hour rather than, you know, like you said, running in the morning and then maybe doing an hour walk at lunch and then, you know, another walk in the evening. You'd say it's better to just do lots of little bouts of it?
Yes. Okay. Movement bites for sure, and just doing little small things throughout the day. Like, absolutely, if you only have time for 15 minutes one day and it's all together, that's fine. But doing small little things is 100% better for overall body health mm-hmm. than just doing a chunk. It's like, you know, the weekend warrior.
Yeah,
they're far more likely to get injured than somebody who you know, does stuff every day.
Yep. Well, actually, we did have, I'll put a link to the article in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC98. We did have an article about weekend warriors, and we did actually find some interesting results about how it affects them training, like injury risk and stuff. I'm sure you'll be interested to read that as well. But yeah, I mean, what you've said with the movement kind of aspect and going for all or nothing would definitely make sense there. And so if people are going to, you know, do these little bouts, you mentioned about wearing the correct footwear. What should that be? Just trying to be barefoot as much as possible for those little movements?
Well, it's a little bit of a catch-22 because a lot of people aren't ready to go barefoot. So I'm not saying go completely barefoot, but I'm...
For like those movements, you mean?
Oh, just yes. And you know what? Like during those times, depending on the particular person, I provide very specific corrective exercises in order to, you know, regain better movement in certain parts of the body. And like, you know, typical runners, calves, mm-hmm. hamstrings. So I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to, you know, get more movement within those particular areas. But yeah, depending on the person, I would give them very specific movements to do.
Okay, great. All right. And then any final thoughts on why this isn't, you know, talked about more, researched more when it comes to our everyday movements? You know, we focus on, like you mentioned at the beginning, that hour spent running, but there isn't too much time and attention paid to, you know, the other 90% of our lives. Do you have any thoughts on why that is?
Just because we all didn't know. And before, you know, that was never an issue mm-hmm. until now, because more technology and more time, you know, spent in a restricted position, like we didn't have as many issues like that we have today. So the reason why it wasn't talked about is because there wasn't as much, you know, diseases of comfort. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the whole notion of comfort is actually not good. People who think, you know, oh, I'm comfortable. Well, comfortable has nothing to do with health. Oh, these shoes are so comfy, I'm going to buy them. That doesn't mean that they're going to be good for your body.
Okay. We actually have someone who, one of our previous podcasts, who kind of goes completely against that. I'll put a link to that in the show notes with Matt Phillips, and I'll let our listeners kind of make up their own mind with that, just because I know he has mentioned that he, for running anyway, comfort is what he considers the most important. So I would encourage listeners to go check that out in the show notes and see what you think.
That's, you know, yeah. Again, it's, you know, what person, anybody who listens to anything, they will believe what they want to believe. And again, running is a very small portion mm-hmm. of the day. So outside of running, if you're going to wear those Hokas, which are crazy mm-hmm. cushioning, then you better do your due diligence and do your appropriate amount of foot movement and calf stretches and hamstring stretches and get your butt in gear. So, you know, it's not like you can undo the effects that they're doing, but you can at least mitigate it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. I definitely agree. And so just to kind of clarify for our listeners before we go into the final kick round, that, you know, a lot of the guests I do have on here may have differing opinions, and they may, you know, they're experts in their various fields, and this may be a little bit confusing sometimes, but like Kristen just said, this is, you know, your choice to make up your mind as to what you want to listen to. And as we learned in the Ben Greenfield episode, a few episodes at runnersconnect.net/RC94, he kind of said that there is no one answer here. This is, you got to try what works for you. You got to listen to what these experts are saying and make up your own mind, as Kristen just mentioned, as to what you want to do and what is important to you. So, Kristen, going into the final kick round, what is the greatest advice you've ever received? Yeah. I really need to start giving people some warning with these questions, I think.
Oh my goodness, that's insane. Well, it's all your trillions of cells talk. Every single move you make has a significant impact on today and tomorrow.
I love that. That is fantastic. That's a great quote there. Okay, your favorite running book or blog?
Oh my goodness gracious. You got to give me a heads up on this. I like reading a lot. I cannot give you a favorite. I honestly like the diversity in so many of them. Sorry, I can't give you one.
Okay. Do you have a favorite running product that you would recommend? Something that maybe that was the yoga 2 therapy ball you mentioned or something else.
Yeah, I mean, the yoga tune-up therapy balls for self-massage are absolutely phenomenal. You can use them over your entire body, and you can get them almost anywhere in the world. They can be shipped anywhere in the world.
Okay.
And there's practitioners all over the world.
Okay, great. All right. What would your advice be to a brand new runner?
I think it's like most people say, start slow. Every step is a great step, and you don't need to do that many to start off.
Oh, good. I love that. And finally, what your pre-race meal would be.
It's different today than it used to be. When I was young, oh, it was totally the pasta and the bread and all that kind of stuff. Honestly, today, and let's just talk about like 5K, 10K. You're talking about breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
Whatever you like. So, yeah, either the night before or the meal just before.
Yeah, like breakfast, you know what? I'd have, you know, a bit of quinoa and a little bit of a wonderful kind of like fruit smoothie. Okay. Nothing crazy, just a bit of a fruit smoothie. No dairy or anything like that. Fruit and a little bit of spinach.
Okay, great. All right. Well, Kristen, thank you so much. This has been really insightful and I've enjoyed kind of learning a bit more about this. And I will put links to your website in the show notes. Is there anything else you would like to say to listeners as to how they can contact you or what, you know, ways to stay in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. Making Movement Matter is the name of my business, and I'm on Facebook, and also I have a website, Instagram, LinkedIn.
Okay.
You can find me almost everywhere. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Makes you think, right? I mean, I knew that posture and other things I did throughout the day were important, but what she's saying makes a lot of sense. Although it's kind of a bit scary, because are we getting to the point where we have to monitor everything we do? I don't know. What do you guys think? So I guess we'll find out as more and more research comes out, but you know that Runners Connect will be here to share it as soon as it does. So make sure you enter to go win those headphones from Jabra. You will not regret it. I love them, and this is someone who never used to like running with headphones. So next week I'm going to be talking to Hilary Dion, whose name you might recognize but maybe not remember why. Well, she was the runner, the elite female, whose hand Meb famously grabbed at the finish line of the Boston Marathon last year. But don't worry, she has much more of a story to share than that. And she does share that story in detail. But make sure you tune in next week to hear it. Until then, have a great week.